Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Every once in a while, we have to bring out the big dog.
Yeah.
Oh, God help us. It's time for Danny Unleashed. Sponsored by Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. Go to eastonroofing.com for more.
Commercial and residential, that's Easton Roofing, getting you back to business, getting you back to life faster. That's what they're all about. You know, there are options a lot of times for those roof repairs, and Easton Roofing will educate you on each and every one of those options. Joe Spiker, the team there at Easton Roofing that I trust up on my roof, get one of their free estimates, free inspection. Not sure, got the snow coming down, you're like, oh my God, I hope my roof can make it. I know it's time. Have Easton Roofing come out and look all over the metro, including Danny. Are you aware, Lawrence Antipica?
He's having a having
Danny's
a
having a headphone issue. Stunning.
Oh, okay. With you as soon as I can hear, Saran.
Yeah, no worries. Call Easton Roofing today at 913-257-5426. That's 913-257-5426. Find them online at eastonroofing.com. Back to business faster. Back to life faster. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters. I hear, like, Danny just cackling in the background, but not near a mic, so I will press on.
Let's try these out. This is wonderful radio.
What is he doing?
There we go.
I can hear you now, Saran.
faulty adapter.
These headphones are, you know, usually you can put it halfway in and it starts to work.
Mark that.
Yeah.
Yeah, please. I was waiting for it to finish. I was don't step on this
curse. You really prefer to just be able to slam it all the way in.
Completion.
Just waiting to see if you're done.
Hey, there's no segment anymore. So what difference does it make?
It's when you have the ones of the screw in for the and then the other one's not and there's no connection. I guess mark that too, probably.
Yeah. Yes, I'm just sitting it out, letting you guys fire away.
All I know is that I can hear you loud and clear now, Saran, and I'm glad to be here, and I sure do wish it would stop, because didn't all the experts say it was supposed to stop at noon?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to the experts. I found them to be unexpertly.
Well, that seems to be a national trend in many areas, not just snow.
I get my weather from Facebook. What are you talking about?
I get mine from Parler.
they shut that down.
So. No snow.
Oh, they did? Yeah. Oh, no wonder I didn't have the forecast then. I thought that was pretty funny. Like, I really know politics
actually.
Stuff, but I think I nailed that, didn't
yes.
I?
Yes. Okay. Hi, Marks.
All right, thank you.
Got to be a weatherman. Got to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
I will actually stick up for the weather, guys. I think it's a tough job, and
it is a tough job.
It's not easy, and I think it's a lot of. It seems like it's we're reading the models. It has come down to, let me see what the computer tells me.
One thing they do a remarkably good job of is
spending 1 minute and 55 seconds telling you what already happened, and then 5 seconds walking back over to the desk and giving you what you've been waiting for. Yes, they are remarkable at that.
No, I just mean in general, like websites and stuff. If you're looking for when it's going to rain today, the hourlies are pretty damn good. Because I'm a golfer, so you're kind of looking at the. That's pretty remarkable. But they don't seem to have improved much in. I think they were just. It seems like they were just about as good at saying what the forecast was going to be 3 days from now, 30 years ago, as they do now. I mean, literally.
Well, because I think that's. The rest of it is, like, if you look at the forecast, like, I trust about, feel pretty good towards 5 days, real good about what they're saying for the next 3 days. But then they'll show you 14 days, and you can tell that at about the eighth day, here's the historical average. Like, that's what they're giving you. right? It's just like here was what the average temperature was. You want to know what the average temperature is on January 27th? It's 37 degrees because that's all they're doing is throwing that dart. But I am with you. I use AccuWeather, which although they did an update and it was kind of screwed up for a while, but it's back to working. And so like now, like it says snow ending in 22 minutes, and it'll be pretty nails.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They're good at that. I'm a Weather Channel man myself, weather.com. Yes, if they say it's going to stop raining in 37 minutes, they're pretty good about that.
You know? So you're on Twitter. You're not on Parler.
Is that it? I guess that would be the case. My account is active as of now.
I honestly had never heard of Parler until somebody told me that they had shut down Parler. And I'm like, and I missed it completely. What the hell happened? I didn't even know there was one out there. All right, we're not going down that road, though, because I'm sure it will not end well. Danny Klingscale is with us, of course, from DannyKlingscale.com. What do you think of this game, Danny? Let's dive right into that. We all gave our picks.
You know, I'm predicting 38-24.
Okay.
But I don't know. We keep waiting for the Chiefs to unleash the fury, and I know you do, because I'm here every week, and they just haven't done it. So I don't know why I'm picking them to kind of cruise in this game, but I guess I am.
I'll say this. If they limp out of this game 24-23, I am not going to be real positive. You're not going to hear me, this is the game. I will be done. I will have traded that in and said, okay, you've gotten to the playoffs where you lose and you go home. There's no margin for error. And if you left it that close against a team that I think is far inferior to you, you're either tired, out of gas, banged up, disinterested, something, but it ain't something you're going to fix this year. Like, I'm expecting the playoffs to be the lighting of the fire of this is the part of the season that has mattered to us, to which I think if they do that, we'll say, how about that? They sleepwalk. You know, I almost say since the Raider loss, like they were kind of like they won. That's great. We're back to the season, right? They won big and grind, you know, pounded the rock in the opener against Houston. And it was kind of like, you know, as soon as they lost, Chris Jones said, did we want to go undefeated? Yeah. And there's been kind of a sense that like, okay, once like an undefeated season went away, it's just like just do enough to handle business because we're going to be measured when we get here. So I am truly expecting them to show a whole nother level. And if they don't, I will say that, hey, they're a salty veteran team that finds ways to win. But, yes, they're leaving teams way too close because they can't knock them out. I'll be on board with that if they just survive this. And if they lose, clearly I was dead wrong. They just, you know.
Well, one thing that's going to be interesting to see in this game is whether the Chiefs actually learn the lesson they really didn't even learn last year and get off to a good start in a damn playoff game. And, you know, this phrase always is, and, you know, the other team's on scholarship too. So you can't just say it's just them, but they're better than these teams. And then they come out and, you know, 20 minutes into the game, you're like, what's going on here? What the hell's going on? They did it three straight times.
Yeah.
So they didn't learn it after the first one. They didn't learn it after the second one. And they didn't learn it after the first one. It was 24-0.
Hold on. But the Super Bowl, wasn't it 7-0 Chiefs?
Yeah, they led early. And then it was 7-0,
10-3?
Yeah.
I guess.
10-3, 10-10.
But still, the 49ers kind of took over. So maybe that narrative isn't exactly the same in the Super Bowl. But all I know is that, you know, you're there in the second half and you're going, the Chiefs are supposed to have kind of had this game by now. What's going on? So, yeah, the Super Bowl probably isn't the best example.
The lingering, I guess, small fear is that maybe Patrick Mahomes is a little too amped, and I think Andy Reid probably has to construct that first offensive drive maybe to let some air out of the balloon so that that doesn't happen. That's just a possibility. But, I mean, I can see him coming out, all right, I'm ready to rock, and then he floats one or two. That's something I want to watch.
I'm fine with the theory, but Danny's right. Fix it.
Yeah, right.
Calm him down. Make him meditate. Tell him to stop coming out flexing and you know, pumping to the fans. Now, you also don't want to be like, oh, now he's you know, we've killed
Mellow.
The spirit.
And, right.
You know, so, I mean, I, you know, I'm not saying this is it. That this is not. I'm smart enough to know that I don't know a lot of things, right? And so Andy Reid's pretty good at managing people, and so, you know, I'll let him do his thing. But I do wonder if he couldn't, you know, maybe a sauna over like, Patrick, hey, when you come out, how about one flex? You know, don't hop up and all the way down the field because I need you to come out and be focused and in rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm open to that idea and that message needs to be sent. But whatever it is, I do agree. And in my expectation, I'll make my prediction, and then we'll see if I'm dead wrong. My expectation, because I think to this point, my offseason prediction for this year has been spot on. I kept saying after they got it, number one, I was big on them winning the Super Bowl last year. Curtis, can you back me up on that?
Mm-hmm.
When everybody else was on the Ravens, I was making bets with Chidea that the Chiefs would go further, and I liked them to win the Super Bowl. I thought they were the best team.
Yep.
And then in the offseason, I said, this to me feels like, with the way that the run it back, that this is the 49ers 88 championship, and 20 is going to be the 49ers 89 championship, where they steamrolled to like a 15-1 or 14-2 record.
14-2.
Blitz the playoffs and bomb the Broncos in the Super Bowl. And that's what I feel this season is going to be. That's what I felt all along. I think it's lived up to that. And so I expect the switch to be flipped here. And I expect them to kick Cleveland's ass. And I expect them to cover the number, whatever it is, in the next game. I'm not going to say that they're going to, because I think the Bills and Ravens are good teams that have quarterbacks that can make plays. Josh Allen's one that you're going to have to play until there's not enough time left to beat him, because he can just drop back and spin it, and they've got weapons and get it. Baltimore, you might be able to kill Lamar Jackson, because I still don't believe he can chase a 10 or 13 point deficit with his arm. But I will expect them to cover the number in the next one, and then I will expect them to win the Super Bowl, unless there is a, you know, Herculean effort from the opposing quarterback. And Aaron Rodgers is certainly capable of that. Tom Brady is. Maybe Drew Brees is. I don't think Drew Brees is anymore, but Tom Brady might still be capable of it because he continues. He's playing his best football coming down the stretch here. But if that happens, then I'll say, okay, I nailed it. If they, even if they win the Super Bowl, but it's by 1 point, 1 point, 1 point, I didn't nail it, because I expect them, you know, it's time to kick ass.
Well, everybody feels like that. I mean, then the betting lines say it. The so-called experts say it. I mean, this is team in a class by itself, and they have not, by result, played like a team that is in a class by itself.
But you know what no one's mentioning? Win at Tampa. Win at New Orleans.
Now, I'm not saying they didn't do all kinds of good things, but I guess it's more the games where, you know, you did expect the fury, and you got zip. But no, they, you know, 14 and if basically 15-1. Let's say if they played their guys,
yes,
they would have won. And with a really difficult road schedule, although certainly it's mitigated by the circumstances of 2020. I mean, the league had a winning road record, so it's not quite as impressive. But still, you win them all. There's nothing wrong with that against quality opposition. But you know, they seldom, you know, especially for the last 2 months, they just didn't beat anybody badly, which is a little weird for a team that's as good as they are.
Yeah, I mean, we've done this before.
I know.
They were beating Tampa badly. They
right.
were.
Yeah, but the game is 60 minutes long.
I agree. But that's where I come back to, there's only so much energy to have in a season, and their energy is focused on the end. I do believe that they're tired. Like, if they would win this championship, like I said, and win by 1 point, 1 point, 1 point, I would say that they underestimated and didn't realize how they were. The tank was never on full when they started this year. It you just, your first Super Bowl, you don't know how to recharge the batteries. And so they came in and they've been drained, and it's been a miraculous run to this point, but they are ripe for the pickings. That may be what the history that we say, you know, later, is that like, okay, all those close losses or close wins, excuse me, was a sign that the tank was on empty. But I definitely do not think enough, and I don't think people are hating on the Chiefs or disrespecting them. Like, Cleveland can go play that card. The Chiefs are, and Chris Jones actually tried to play it today and said, you know, when asked about Cleveland feeling disrespect, he's like, well, I think we're disrespected. okay. All right. I'm not figuring, but Okay, we'll go with it. But I just, you know, I want to believe that their whole season is about the postseason, and this is where they're going to go to another level, and they're going to ratchet things up, and that even the coaches maybe have sandbagged some things, and that when they got up on a team in a regular game and knew they had enough points to win, and yes, mistakenly, taking their foot off the pedal before they were really across the finish line, but they still had enough to turn it back on. When they needed to go get a first down, they never put the other teams back out there with the ball in their hands and a chance to win. Right, I guess theoretically the Raiders were out there with 40 seconds and a chance to win in that run.
No, generally they get the first down they needed or the stop they needed, whatever.
Yeah, which to me speaks to
recovered the onside kick, etc.
They always did whatever they needed to do to win, and that's the mark of a good team.
No question. There's no question about that. But the initial question was what I think about the game, and I think that the Chiefs are going to win rather handily. But but the other part of my brain says, "What the hell are you thinking? They just haven't done it."
It is true that no Super Bowl team, I think I went back to 2002. No team has gone, or no, I went back to 78, the beginning of the 16 game schedule. No team has gone to the Super Bowl after not having at least one double digit win in the last 8 weeks of the season. But a lot of those teams had won. You know, a handful of those teams had won.
Yeah, but a lot of those teams also probably lost three games.
Yeah, yeah. And the difference between one and zero isn't that big of a deal. And as you mentioned, we've said a number of times, there were blowout elements in a lot of those games that just didn't end up that way. They weren't slogs.
True enough. But it also says something about, you know, you want to be, if they need a little more bully in them, I guess. You know, just kick somebody when they're down. You know, just humiliate them.
they were trying to in Miami.
They don't seem to have that in them.
I'll bristle again. It's a semantic battle, as you and I often do. They need it, or we'd like to have it. Like, do they need it? No, they don't need it.
They absolutely don't need it. But the other side of it is, if you're playing games where at the end of the game you need a couple of first downs.
It may not be essential, but it is helpful.
It'd be nice that if you're just handing the ball off with a 10-point lead, not trying to get a first down with a 6-point lead.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to be just one bad mistake away from
exactly. losing. One, you know, fumble, scoop and score, and oh no, we dominated the whole game. Now we're on a beach.
You're getting off to a fast
South Beach or where Tampa, wherever the beach is in Tampa.
Right. Getting off to a fast start is obviously one of the things that you think is important. But we played the game of what are the keys to the game after joking around about just not getting lost on the way to the stadium. What do you think the keys to the game are? Like, I do agree the running attack of Cleveland is and believe me, that's all, they took the answers to the running backs even when the questions weren't about the running backs. So they are well aware of talking about Chubb and Hunt. And my fear is more so that they're over-focused on that. They're amped up. They know how hard Kareem Hunt runs, and they're going to come flying up to put a hit on him, and they're going to get burnt by play action over the top, the same way Will Fuller beat him to open against Houston, amped up, and, oh, we forgot to cover the guy. It was play action, and we all bit on the run because we couldn't wait to get that first hit. And then Fuller's running wide open down the field. Like, I actually think the scenario is Cleveland comes out spinning it, saying we know that they're looking at our run game, and we're going to come out and we're going to throw, you know, with some stuff we've seen, some new stuff we haven't done, off the play action because they're going to be amped up to stop the run, and they're going to throw right down the field. And then if they can get in front and then stay in front, then they can lean on you with the running game. But I think the key for the running game is to just, you know, get it to where most of the runs are 4 yards or less, and don't give up a bunch over 12.
Right, and we agree on that scenario. I think that Baker Mayfield, you know, this sounds dumb, but I think Baker Mayfield is the key ingredient in this game. I think he has to be as good as he's been recently, and that the play action early in the game, when the Chiefs probably are really going to be geeked up to stop the run, is really important. And, you know, I think Kevin Stefanski is an elite play caller, and he will be on the sidelines this time. And so I expect, you know, that the Chiefs just need to be not, we talked about Patrick Mahomes, not overamped on defense either. you know, be fired up, but be sound as far as your technique is concerned. And right, don't be standing there 4 yards deep in the backfield with Kareem Hunt, with your arms wrapped around Kareem Hunt while, you know, Jarvis Landry is trotting into the end zone.
Jarvis Landry's just not that guy. Like, right? Like, I and a lot of the things that I try to read as much of the stuff written about this game as I can. You know, the Raider game, the one they lost that they actually tried in, gets brought up, and they're like, hey, that secondary got beat. Well, who's Henry Ruggs for the Browns? Because it's not Jarvis Landry. That's not his game.
Right, but I what I'm talking about is just literally like a play action intermediate.
No, slant, and I agree.
Slant, and he takes it to the house because nobody's home.
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah, the Will Fuller play from the Texans, the first play from scrimmage where they threw it for the touchdown. Yeah, I agree. That's my I worry about that as well. But I'm just saying, you know, to me, what the Raiders did right, the recipe that they showed, you know, well, what's the recipe? The Raiders showed everybody the blueprint. Here it is. Yeah, but it's a blueprint that most people can't follow, right? Oh, it involved certain bricks, like, right, a quarterback that'll take it downfield, a guy who can stretch the field, you know, a play caller that's got enough plays that he can, to which Stefanski might check this box, right? I haven't seen, I'm not willing to go all the way there because I've seen a lot of guys be really good for 1 year and then all of a sudden, okay, you know, he's got all the stuff that he wanted to do. He gets to do all the stuff he's wanted to do because he's the head guy. And then the next year, it's not there because he's all out of ideas. Like, can he reinvent? We'll see. So I'll reserve judgment on Stefanski till later. But I think he took over a mess and did a hell of a job. So I think the guy can coach. But I like the bricks that are there are score and keep scoring. And I don't think Cleveland can keep scoring. I think he'll have some stuff. I think they'll get theirs. I think he'll burn Spagnuolo once or twice, not six or seven or eight times. And they'll get some points on the board because that's the modern NFL. Nobody's throwing a shutout out there anymore. All right? But I don't think they can keep putting sevens on the board to stay in front of the Chiefs. I don't think they can get to 31 points, which is a bare minimum that they're going to need.
I agree. That's why I'm picking the Chiefs in the game. But I think that they are capable of scoring one in the way that we talked about, and then maybe having at least two more really time-consuming drives where they are picking up just four and five, but it's adding up to first downs, and the Chiefs end up with 24 minutes of possession. But the Chiefs can still score 34 or 37 points in 24 minutes. So, you know, that's the prescription. There is a prescription always to beat the Chiefs. You can see it. You know, you can run it on them and possess the ball and maybe hit one deep one time or whatever. But you still, all those things have to go that way, and you probably need another, you know, a turnover or two. You know, the Chiefs score often when they have the ball. The best way for them to win is if the Chiefs only have seven possessions or something like that.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. A lot of head coaching jobs getting filled. Eric Bieniemy's name, not one of them yet. We'll talk to Danny Klingskill about that next. It's Danny Unleashed, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Have Easton Roofing out right now. If you've got any questions about your roof, estimates are always free. And Easton will educate you about every possible roofing solution you might have. It's not about Easton Roofing. It's about your specific need. Angela's Super Service Award winner. You can call Easton Roofing right now at 913-257-5426. See them online at eastonroofing.com.
The Program with Soren Petro.
This drama contains adult language. Discretion is advised.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt. End of the hour answer. Which starting quarterback this weekend made his college debut at Arrowhead Stadium? This is a question posed to me yesterday by one Blair Kirkhoff, but I knew the answer because I'd researched this last season when trying to find a precedent for Drew Locke, who had started a college and NFL game at Arrowhead. I wanted to see who had started a game at Arrowhead and as a pro and as a college player.
That was really well worded, by the
way. This guy did not start, but he did get it. He made his debut at Arrowhead with the eight quarterbacks this weekend.
So we've got Brady, Breeze. It wouldn't have been Breeze. Purdue wasn't here. Wouldn't have been Brady. Michigan wasn't here. Wouldn't have been Rodgers. Cal wasn't here. Unless he does JUCO. Does JUCO count? Are you talking about his?
It would count.
Wow. So did Rodgers come here? JUCO. Goff is going to start. Cal guy. But did he start at JUCO also? No, he was all 4 years of Cal.
Didn't Cal play at Arrowhead one time?
Did they come play K-State here?
I think they did.
They did. They did. It's Aaron Rodgers, isn't it?
Yep. August 23rd, 2003, yeah. Cal versus K-State, down 35-14 in the fourth. Rodgers took over for Reggie Robertson and threw a TD pass to another future NFL player, J.J. Arrington. That was the first, his college debut was at Arrowhead.
I'm sure that the coach of Cal now is sitting around thinking, you know, that Reggie Robertson, he was quite a player to start him ahead of Aaron Rodgers. What a plan that was. Well, I was really on my game.
You think every time they, you know, draft time rolls around, they start showing Aaron Rodgers sitting there and Alex Smith being up there, that he doesn't just, like, change the channel real quick? You know, because he was the guy that, you know, had him on his roster and couldn't figure out that he was better. Like, it's one thing when you're like, okay, a whole nother level, which one of these guys is going to be better? It's hard,
yeah,
right, to
no
know
question.
Who can handle the bullets and the everybody on the defense being great. It's hard to figure that out.
And also,
but man, when you got both guys on your roster, you can't screw that up.
Right. And also, you know, Aaron Rodgers does seem to have the kind of personality that might rub a coach the wrong way. You know, there's some of that in everything.
That could be. That could be. Then you're as. But I will say this: you got to check your ego at the door.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Know?
Jimmy's and Joe's are what make it go.
Not every coach gets the Rodgers rate. Are you trying to tell me?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well done. Well said. Well put. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Everybody can get that tonight. Use the app. The easiest way to order at Joe's is with the app, whether it's 119th and Strangline, 117th and Row, or the original at 47th and Mission. And you can send it anywhere in the country with joeskc.com. Great gift for family, friends, and certainly for clients. joeskc.com. Danny Klinkscale is with us, little Danny Unleashed.
I'll say this, that there is one area that Aaron Rodgers, now more experienced, is superior to Patrick Mahomes, and that is acting.
Mahomes has gotten better, though.
He's gotten better. Yeah, he's gotten better. That's why I said more experience.
He's getting better. He's going to keep getting better because he's going to keep getting spots, too. You know, that's for sure. That ain't going away.
I think he's got – Rodgers is a better actor, right? Like, if you're going to cast a movie, I would cast Rodgers over Mahomes. But Mahomes has got a little bit of that Jimmy Fallon, Henry, Saturday Night Live appeal to him.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. Who would win an Oscar first? I'll give it to Rodgers. Who would be, you know – and Rodgers is a witty guy, too, but – Mahomes just maybe it's just the difference in their age, and you know. But Mahomes has that kind of Henry kid, you know, lovable, mouthy kid appeal to him. Not that he's mouthy; he's always very polite. But I mean, just kind of that Henry kid look to him that you're like, oh man, no, that wasn't well acted. But damn, I like that guy. You know,
well, Rodgers for years. I mean, I don't know if they still do it every year. They take every game teams. They take the captain's picture, and the thing in Green Bay is for him to be somewhere in the background. Making a goofball face.
It.
Yeah, he photobombs every picture. So he's kind of been that guy since he was a rookie.
Yeah, he'll wear a hat or a disguise or just be like scratching his chin, like looking up like he's, you know, whatever. He always does that. He's a witty guy. There's no doubt. And I got to interview him once before he got too big. One of Boger's buddies somehow knew Rodgers and texted him in Tahoe. And told him he had to come over and go on with the guys in KC. And this guy was good enough friends that Rodgers did. He goes, all right, are you the guys from KC? And we're like, yeah. He's like, all right, so-and-so, is that a friend of yours? He's like, yeah. He goes, all right, he's one of my buddies. He says, I got to go on with you guys. I got about 8 minutes. I'm like, all right, let's do it. And and he was a fun guy to talk to. You know, I mean, he wasn't a complete card.
Just don't call
him
short.
He was also just kind of doing a guy a favor. You know, wasn't his first choice.
Yeah.
To be doing that, but he was still fine, you know, compared to like Marshall Faulk. Take out the A and the L, and I can tell you what he can do in that last name. I do want to get into the coaches, Danny, because Is there a hire that you love or a hire that you hate so far out of the three that have gone down?
I'll tick
and
him
is Smith
off.
Even official yet?
Tick him off again just so we, you know.
Okay,
I'm not
so Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator for the Titans to the Falcons. Is that official yet, Curtis?
I'm looking for that right now.
Okay. Everyone's reporting it like it's done if it's not official. I don't know. I was on the Zooms and doing some stuff, so something might have come out in the last 2 hours, might not. I don't know. Urban Meyer to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and then Robert Saleh to the New York Jets, the 49ers defensive coordinator.
Well, I'll have to say that Robert Saleh is the greatest hire in the history of looking like a movie star is going to be a football coach.
He may have just out Tomlin, yes. Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, he looks like, you know, The Rock is going to coach the Jets now. Wow, that's so cool.
Dude, he's big and muscular and in shape, and he wears the long-sleeve T-shirt underneath the short-sleeve T-shirt, which just makes him look even bigger.
Right.
And he's got bald. He's got the great skin tone. He's nice brown. You know, skin tone. He is, like I said, I've always felt like Mike Tomlin with the jacket undone and the cross hanging was like Shaft as a coach, you know, but Saleh may have just out Tomlin.
Yeah. I guess I know that it has not been a great prescription, but Urban Meyer has just been so great in every stop. The very first time Stan and I had him, we had him on College Game Day when he was the coach of Utah. And he spoke for about 50 seconds to the first question. And I was like, whoa, who's this dude? Yeah. I mean, and he's, you know, it turns out he's got enough of, you know, being a bad person in him to probably be ruthless. You know, we've learned over the years that he's willing to cut some corners. So that probably is a positive in coaching, I would say. So I would say that I've got my money on it. You know, as soon as I heard the news, I said out loud when I think I was in my car, whatever, I said out loud to myself, they're going to win.
Yeah, I agree. And that was my initial reaction. Jed and Curtis weren't quite as big on it yesterday. As we talk about it, I'm sure we'll bring Curtis to our side because you know how easily moved off his
I just haven't. Does his system, his quarterback create systems, or does his system create quarterbacks, successful quarterbacks? He's going to have to do that to win in the NFL.
Well, and that's why I said yesterday, my answer to that is hell yes, it does, because he hasn't had one of his quarterbacks. Really, I mean, the best of any quarterback he's ever had is Alex Smith, who was considered a Titanic disaster for like 6 years. You know, or at least 4 years in San Francisco. I don't know, maybe I'm making it longer than it was. But, you know, all the Ohio State quarterbacks, trash. Tim Tebow, trash.
So he's, he's great at creating quarterbacks who are really good in college and not very good in the NFL.
Exactly. And you're giving no NFL coach credit that they're like, what's that Urban Meyer doing? I can't put my finger on it. I'm not able to recreate the system. They're having you come on, Saran.
Yeah, but no,
his point is, I know what your point is, and I agree with it, that he made chicken salad out of chicken spit.
Yes. And now he's going to get a generational quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, and he's going to make him better than whatever, you know, Robert Saleh and the Jets staff would make him.
Yeah. That's what I think. Now, he was vague enough to this is how much respect I have for Urban Meyer. He, at his press conference today, he didn't commit to Trevor Lawrence. He said there's really good talent at the quarterback position. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, he knows something we all don't know. I mean, he ain't going to pick Trevor Lawrence. He's going to pick some other guy who's going to blow up. He's going to pick Patrick Mahomes.
I think he's just smart enough to know to not commit to
anything.
I
agree with that. I generally agree with that. But that's what I said. My respect level for him is enough to say, oh, he knows something I don't know. Or we all don't
know. Well, I will say this. If he takes Justin Fields, then he's screwed. All right? Because I don't see it in Fields. All right, I know I don't even, and I don't think he's going to be the second quarterback. In fact, a lot of the things now have the kid from BYU going second. I think there's a lot of prospects. I think after Trevor Lawrence, they're all going to be Josh Allen's, like third year, okay. But I don't see anybody that's hitting the ground running. You know, Trey Lance didn't even play this year, and he's been playing at North Dakota State. He's listed in the first round. I actually like Mac Jones at Alabama. And I think he's accurate, and I do agree, and I've had a number of personnel people tell me, you know, listen, we know there are talented guys at Alabama. We know that there are guys on that team that are going to be studs in the NFL. But we also know that there are guys, kind of the Ryan Sims next to Julius Peppers. Like, when everybody around you is great, all you got to do is win one-on-one battles. And sometimes in the NFL, you got to beat a double team, or you got to, you know, it's like they do say it's kind of hard. Like, was Reggie Ragland an ass-kicking linebacker? He looked like it at Alabama. It turns out, no. He had ass-kickers in front of him, and he ran untouched and rocked people's world. You know, it ends up he's not as good as his draft position was. And so I do get that Mac Jones has had all kinds of talent around him in his year and a half as the starter at Alabama, but I think he puts the ball on the money.
And he also
keeps it out of harm's way.
To me, his numbers are so stupid that when I saw them up on the screen, I was like, okay, this has to end. We cannot play football where a man can complete 77% of his passes. This is a joke. This is a joke. Are they playing 11-on-9? Yeah. Something's got to change. Now, I know Alabama, you're right, great players all over the place, et cetera. But that's just not – I'm sorry, that's not football.
Well, it's where it's going, so you better get used to it.
I guess.
It is more like basketball, I will grant you. The success rate of offense, it's your defensive game plan has to be more of an NBA game plan. All right, if we can hold them under 100 – our offense will get to 120, and we'll kick their ass.
But, like, and you know, we're already. Would you want to watch basketball if they made 77% of their field goal attempts? I don't know if I would. That's just not enough, you know, give and take for me.
But completing a pass is not scoring a point.
I understand that.
They score on a lot higher percentage of plays.
I don't think.
Anyway, let's not get trapped in that.
Right.
Let's not go down that.
But anyway, yeah, that's all I was saying is that Urban Meyer has enough of my respect level that I actually thought he might just go and pick somebody else because he thinks they're better than Trevor Lawrence. And you know, to the point, Trevor Lawrence didn't play a great game in the national championship game. Whether that hurt his
bust.
You mean against LSU or the semifinal game against Ohio State?
I mean Ohio State. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
I thought. What solidified Trevor Lawrence for me was the LSU game. For a half, he was outgunned talent-wise, and for a half, he went toe-to-toe with him. And I also like his athleticism.
Oh, yeah. I like him, too.
No, I know. But I'm just saying things that I think are why it's going to translate and why he's going to be the real deal is one, I saw him go toe-to-toe for at least a half, and then they ran out of gas. You know, but he went toe-to-toe with LSU for a half. And I was like, okay, he's outgunned here. The other team's offense, but also LSU, was getting a lot of pressure on him, and he was making throws at the last second and that kind of thing. And I think he's athletic enough. One of the things, like, where if Mac Jones sucks, it's because every time he gets to stand upright and deliver the ball. But Trevor Lawrence can make the throw off balance that you have to make in the NFL because you don't always get to set your feet in the NFL. And Trevor Lawrence makes, you know, he starts to scramble up in the pocket, and then he lets go of it on the run. That's why I think Trevor Lawrence is a real deal. And I think Urban Meyer will take him. And I think Urban Meyer knows immediately. I think he's smart enough. I can't expose my quarterback to the kind of hits that I did in college. I know that. But he'll do it enough to force you to defend it. And, I think he's going to be good. All right, so do you hate either one of the other ones?
No, I guess I have some affection for Arthur Smith because, first of all, his name is Arthur. And – secondly, he doesn't look like a coach, so
right.
I kind of like that. So, and he's done a good job. I guess out of the three, I would make that that would be number three of the three. But I still have some general affection for Arthur Smith.
I think he's done a really good job there in Tennessee. But I think, you know, the head coach, that's like, okay, great. You know, yeah, he got the most out of Tannehill. He's not afraid to feed the beast when he's like, okay, I got to run the ball. A.J. Brown has developed. I think there's a lot to like there. But I think they've also had a great offensive line. And, You know, so we'll see. We'll see what happens when he goes into Jacksonville.
I guess the most unusual thing is I heard your
Atlanta.
I heard your discussion the other day, and I guess the most unusual aspect of the three coaching hires is that a defensive coordinator got hired.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. So. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. I as an owner, I look around and I go, because if you like, we're gonna see what happens with Tennessee now that the OC's gone.
By the way, the Falcons have just made it official. Okay. Arthur Smith.
Yeah. So what's gonna happen to Vrabel now that he doesn't have Smith? I you know, John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin have been through offensive coordinators and kept winning. So is Bill Belichick, right? But most defense, like, you get this, like down in Atlanta, what's his name? Could not survive
Dan Quinn.
Shanahan leaving. Never could get the offense back, right? Couldn't figure it out. And they poured draft picks into that side of the ball. Calvin Ridley, three of the offensive linemen are first-round picks. They re-signed Devonta Freeman. They just kept going on the offensive side of the ball, and they never could get back to what they were. They couldn't make it happen. And I worry if Brian Daboll gets a job leaving Buffalo, I would be real worried if I'm Sean McDermott. That, like, okay, now he's got to go find the guy. That to me is the reason to hire an offensive guy, is because you know your quarterback's always got his guy.
Yeah, Vrabel has hired two quality OCs.
Who was the first one?
It just occurred to me. He's coaching this weekend, Matt LaFleur.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. I had completely forgotten about that. I was like, oh, wait a second, Matt LaFleur. So this would be this. So he has hired two good ones. So that might make it a little different. But
yeah, I think sometimes he's a little too old school, but I think Vrabel is a good coach with staying power. I'll say that.
I do too. I like Vrabel a lot. All right, let's take a break. More with Danny. Danny Unleashed, Danny Klinkscale from DannyKlinkscale.com is with us. We'll come back. I'll give him a shot at the question we asked yesterday. Who's got the most at stake out of all the people playing in the playoffs right now that are still left? Who has the most at stake? We'll find out Danny's thoughts on that. Danny Klinkscale brought to you by Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing, the roof over your house, it's high. They're workers, they're not. So if you've got residential or commercial roofing problems, Easton Roofing will fix them so you can get back to business, get back to life faster. No payment collected until you're 100% satisfied. 913-257-5426 to schedule your free, honest estimate. You can find them online at eastonroofing.com.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I pee my pants.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Curtis Siebold, and of course, Danny Klinkscale for Danny Unleashed, brought to you by Easton Roofing. Find them online at eastonroofing.com. Angie's List Super Service Award winner, working the entire metro, including Lawrence and Topeka. Call 913-257-5426. Danny, Eric Bieniemy, do you agree with me that the NFL owes an explanation as to why he didn't get a job if he doesn't get a job?
Well, I think they'd be wise to give one, or the league would be wise to encourage the word to at least leak out from some people, because I've said this before. I'm not, you know, and the evidence likely would be that, you know, most coaches are going to fail. So it's not going out on the limb to say, you know, I'm not gung-ho about the fact that Eric Bieniemy is going to be a great coach, but he's done everything requisite to get an opportunity. Yeah, so there's got to be, if there's something, there's little some fly in the ointment here, somebody leak it or say what the hell's going on. We heard the rumblings about a bad interview or whatever, you know, but that was a couple of years ago. He's probably learned from that. Zoom probably benefits him. But he's checked every box. So you gotta say something.
And maybe define bad interview.
Right.
Not just say, you know, as we discussed this yesterday, you know, you weren't comfortable with hiring him. What does that mean? You know, to tell us what you mean by a bad interview.
Right. I totally agreed. I mean, because every box has been checked. Other coaches who were in the same situation and might have had the question as to whether they were truly the offensive coordinator here got jobs. They're both white. There's no, there is no excuse. Does that mean that he's the greatest candidate? Does that mean Robert Saleh is not a better coaching candidate if you've sat down with him? No, but he's on the offensive side of the ball where everybody gets hired. Everybody says he's a great leader of men, which is a real key component to being a great head coach. You can surround yourself with some of the other stuff to help it out. Yeah, somebody. I don't think people are going to come out with a definitive public statement, but they can clearly find ways to get the word out as to why they're not hiring that man.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think it's I think it's high tide that he gets a job. And I just think big picture wise, they owe an explanation for all the other guys out there trying to get jobs. All right, Danny, we'll talk more about that hopefully. After he gets a job. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Everybody be safe out there.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, among teams that have hosted at least 10 postseason games, two have losing records at home. The Chiefs are one. Who's the other? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.